to the Veterinary Financial Podcast, where we discuss financial freedom and professional success. I'm Meredith Jones, a veterinarian and financial planner for vets.
And I'm David Azis. I'm also a financial planner for vets. So today, we've got a juicy episode for you guys. Basically, I'm going to go off on a rant. Both Meredith and I have been noticing this a lot since we became financial planners and worked with veterinarians. And it's just become so prominent. I was like, why don't we actually have an episode on this? Because if we can get the word out on this, we're going to save everybody a load of taxes who are vets, basically. And so the trap that I wanted to call out today that would hopefully save you or whoever is listening a ton of money are traditional IRAs and why most vets shouldn't contribute to them. Not all, most. But when I say most, I really mean like most, but not all. You always have to say it depends with personal finance. But here's the trap that we're talking about. And again, the trap is why you shouldn't contribute to one and why you might want to invest your money elsewhere. I guess let me start off with defining what a traditional IRA is and then explain how that leads to the problems with veterinarians. So traditional IRA is a retirement account that you go open up on your own, so not through your employer. And you can go, you know, Charles Schwab, Vanguard, Fidelity, E-Trade, whatever, and open up that account. And the benefit of that account and why people would be incentivized to use it is it's supposed to kind of act like a 401k where, let's say you make, I'll just use a round number, $100,000, for example. If you make 100 grand, let's make it 200 grand. If you make 200 grand and you go contribute $7,000, which is the annual limit, to a traditional IRA, what most people think is going to happen, or quote, what the benefit's supposed to be, but wouldn't actually happen in that case, what's supposed to happen is it will reduce your taxable income by whatever you contribute that year. So if you made 200,000 and that year you contributed 7 grand, what you're hoping would happen, it would lower your taxable income by 7,000. So top line of your tax return is now going to be 193 before further deductions. Okay, cool. So you just shielded 7 grand away from the government that you otherwise would have paid taxes on. And so you save, depending on your tax rate, 2-3 grand in taxes you would have otherwise paid. That's the purpose of the traditional IRA. Just like how we love pre-tax 401k contributions because it will lower your taxable income by whatever you contribute. But here's the problem and why it's a trap for most vets. There are income limits that preclude you from getting that deduction that most people don't know about. A lot of people know or at least have heard of the Roth IRA income limits. Like, oh, once you basically make as a single person over 156 plus grand, like there's some nuance with that, but you make over a certain amount, you cannot contribute to a Roth IRA. It's just a no-go after a certain point. Okay. And yes, there are backdoor Roths, but like it's a clear-cut rule. If you make too much to contribute to a traditional IRA to get that deduction, you're still allowed to contribute. The IRS says go ahead. It's just you don't get the tax benefit, which is why it's a very common trap, because you're technically still allowed to do it. And those income limits are pretty darn low. And specifically for veterinarians, you guys fall in this category most of the time of thinking that you should want to do a traditional IRA contribution to save on taxes and student loans. And it turns out you made too much because you're a veterinarian. So here are the income limits. This is just Googling it on the IRS website. If you're single and you have a 401k, 403b, 457b, if you have a retirement plan offered through your employer, and that's key, then if you make more than $87,000, there is no deduction. You got no tax benefit. If you are married and you file married filing jointly, if you and your spouse combined, your AGI is more than $143,000, no deduction. There was no tax benefit of contributing. And here's the kicker, because this also applies probably disproportionately to a lot of veterinarians over any other profession, is, hey, if you're doing married filing separately, which a lot of vets do as part of their student loan strategy, if you make $10,000 or more, then again, you're still allowed to do it. You're just not going to get any benefit out of it. There's no deduction.
David, did you say $10,000 or more?
Yes, $10,000 or more.
So basically everybody.
Basically everybody. In all three of those cases, whether you're single or you're married filing jointly or you're married filing separately, in all three of those cases, I would argue that the vast majority of vets earn either more than $87,000 single, more than $143,000 between them and their partner, and more than $10,000 no matter what. And so that's why it's very rare to see a veterinarian who has an employer-sponsored retirement plan be eligible for this. And you can go to the IRS website and look at all the details, because there are other scenarios. Like, what if you don't have an employer-sponsored plan? Simple IRAs count too. And so there are some circumstances where if you absolutely like don't have any employer retirement plan, the contribution can be deductible. It's just most vets who aren't self-employed have some sort of 401k, simple IRA, 403b, 457b, whatever. Like, it's pretty rare to have none. And if you do have none, you might say, should I go do this? Well, if you'd have none, maybe, but I guess this is, I'm pointing out the pitfall. Okay. So if you do have any employer sponsored retirement account, this is something to look out for. And so why is this such a trap? Like, why is it so bad? Okay, yes, you know you don't get the deduction if you fall into any of those categories. By the way, it also gets more complicated. What if you don't have one, but your spouse does? There are other additional income limits to look out for that would still preclude you from taking the deduction. So again, there are some circumstances where you would get it. It's just for a lot of vets, most of the time you don't. So why is, again, this bad? Well, let's play it out. If you contribute $7,000 to your traditional IRA and you weren't able to take the deduction, and then you invest the money, you lock it up until age 59 and a half plus, unless you want to pay penalties on it. So you lock it up until retirement, which isn't necessarily bad. It's just usually you'd want some sort of benefit in exchange for doing that, which you're not getting. And then when you take the money out in retirement, all the gains that you made, all the investment profits, gains, the growth of the money, that is going to be taxed as ordinary income. So if you invested $7,000 and that grew to $70,000, that profit, the difference between $7,000 and $70,000 that you took out, that's going to get taxed as if you're making that income in retirement. Or you might still be working at that point. Most vets never retire. But either way, it gets taxed as income. What if you took that $7,000 and put it in a brokerage account and invested in the same exact thing? A brokerage account is just an investment account that doesn't have the word retirement in front of it. You can access the money penalty-free at any time. So benefit one, you can access the money penalty-free at any time, as opposed to the traditional IRA. Benefit two, even though it's not a retirement account, if you weren't able to take the deduction, you're actually going to save more in taxes, because if you hold an investment for longer than 1 year, it gets taxed as long-term capital gains, the profit, not ordinary income. And those tax rates are usually less than your ordinary income tax rates. It's 0% in some cases, depending on how much you make. It's 15%. At least as of the date of this recording, on the federal side, even if you make an absurd amount of money, even if you make $500,000, it's still 15%. And if you make an absurd amount of money, yes, it goes to 20%. But that is more favorable than income taxes, which are, you know, for most veterinarians, 22, 24, 32, etc. Know this up front before you make the contribution, because it's so common that we see this, where it's like, hey, you do this, and we'll see people who've done this for like 5, 6, 10 years in a row. So they got a lot of gains already. And if they kept on doing it and we didn't call it out until 25 plus years in the future, well, an extra like 10 to 15% taxes on $1 million in gains, plus the fact that you couldn't access the money if you wanted to now, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars in extra taxes paid for locking up your money for longer for no extra benefit. It's pretty crazy. There's a lot of more efficient ways to invest. And if I sound annoyed, it's because it's almost laughable at this point how common it is. And it's not just veterinarians. It just so happens that lots of vets have access to a retirement plan already and fall in those income limits. So it's like, Ugh. Meredith, chime in here. I'm just going to give myself a stomach ulcer if I keep on talking about this. What are your thoughts? Why do you think this is so common? What can people do about it?
Yeah. And it's not just veterinarians. So it's interesting because we have Connor Pierce on our team, who is a physical therapist, and he now works with a lot of physical therapist clients at SLP Wealth as a financial planner. He was actually talking about this because he sees it too, and he calls it cry a little IRA oopsies. So, which might be the title of our episode. We'll see. But yeah, that's what he calls it. It is really common. So if we're looking for, okay, alternatives for what to do with that money. So David already mentioned one would be, okay, you could put it in a brokerage account so that you have the flexibility of accessing it whenever you want. And you have access to those more favorable long-term capital gains tax rates. Another thing you could do instead is you want this to be, and you intended for it to be, retirement money, right? You could contribute to a Roth IRA or backdoor Roth IRA instead. I mentioned both of those. Depends on your tax filing status, depends on how much you make, whether you would do a Roth IRA or backdoor Roth IRA. But anyway, either of those. And the benefit of doing that is that, okay, same thing as the contributions we're talking about, where you contribute with that post-tax money, just, you know, directly out of your bank account into the Roth IRA or into the backdoor Roth IRA. We're talking about people who put that into a traditional IRA instead. But the difference is, if it goes into a Roth IRA, you don't have to pay any taxes on the earnings in retirement. So that's the big deal.
You mentioned backdoor Roth. That also gives me a stomach ulcer, because lots of vets fall into the category of maybe a backdoor Roth makes sense for your financial plan. But if you've been doing this, now you can't do a backdoor Roth, or you can, but it gets more complicated, because if you already have traditional IRA assets out there, there's this thing called pro rata, and it's like, oh, it's a mess. So just to give you guys a little bit of an ulcer, because hopefully it'll prevent you from doing this, or at least double checking that you are going to get the deduction if you do it. How do you fix this if you already did it?
I'll give you even more of an ulcer, David. Okay, not only do we have to worry about unwinding this and unraveling this in this situation when it's just a traditional IRA where they've made non-deductible contributions, but there are some folks who, okay, maybe they left their former employer, maybe they either did this themselves or worked with another financial advisor and they advised doing this. They take their 401k and they put it into a rollover IRA. And so all of that money at that point is pre-tax. So that's by itself, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Not always the best thing, but not necessarily a bad thing. But here's the thing that makes me cry a little. When on top of that rollover IRA, they put additional money in, and it is this non-deductible portion. And so then you've got what we call commingling of pre-tax money and post-tax money. And then that can be tough to unravel, because sometimes the custodians give you a hard time with trying to separate. Okay, then you've got to separate what was pre-tax and what was post-tax and try to put it into different separate accounts so that you can get rid of this, so that you can open up the backdoor Roth IRA option. So an example of that would be to take the rollover portion of it and maybe you can roll it into the 401k with your new employer, or 403b, whatever, new employer plan, and then take the part that was your contribution after tax, this non-deductible traditional IRA contribution, and see if you can just get that converted over to become a Roth IRA.
If you're at that point, get a financial planner to help you. You're probably going to screw something up.
Yeah, don't do it yourself.
Here's what I've had to do now 20 times this year already. There's someone who comes to me with a 100 grand traditional IRA. I have to figure out how much of that, like Meredith said, could be from an old rollover. So like from an old 401k, did they contribute to it after that rollover event? And when they did contribute, were they working for an employer? Did they make how much that year? And did they have an employer-sponsored retirement account, right? We basically got these three different buckets where it's like, I have to ask for like 10 years worth of tax returns to see if they took the deduction or not. I have to ask for 10 years worth of like year-end statements from their custodian, like Vanguard or whatever. And I have to mathematically figure out for the client, okay, 50 grand from rollover, 20 grand in contributions that you didn't take a deduction on. Okay. And then that, therefore, the remaining 30 is gains. The investment's going up. All right, cool. So then that means if we convert the whole thing to Roth, here's your tax bill. Should we do it or not? And it gets really into the weeds and there are fixes and it's a lot of work. And the best thing to do is just not fall into the traditional IRA trap up front. A lot of people might be thinking about our 100% relief vets out there who are 1099 and therefore don't have an employer-sponsored retirement account. They might be thinking, oh, okay, so I'm good. I should do the traditional IRA. Well, I would argue maybe not. There might be better options for you because the traditional IRA, even if you can take the deduction in that example, a lot of relief vets make enough where they're trying to invest more than $7,000 in their retirement account. What if you did a solo 401k, which has way higher limits and can be a lot more flexible? And if you do that as a relief vet, now you can still do backdoor Roths because you're not doing a traditional IRA. So for the vast majority of 100% relief vets who you could argue could take this deduction, I would then just say, probably still doesn't make sense, but also for other reasons. There are probably still better options out there. You know, off the top of my head, it's a very unique circumstance where a veterinarian would benefit from a traditional IRA. It's really if you are 100% not relief. So you are an associate W-2, you don't do any reliefing, and your employer doesn't offer any retirement account, and you are not married to someone who has a 401k, 403b, etc. Go look it up yourself, but you can see how it's a very small percent of vets would fit that description.
Mm-hmm. That's almost nobody.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I recommended to do a traditional IRA contribution that was outside of doing the backdoor Roth process.
Yeah, and if you're in that category, you might want to put a bug in the ear of your practice owner of like, hey, can we get an employer retirement plan, even if they don't match it, just so you've got access to be able to save more for retirement.
I guess I'll wrap this up too with just a reminder to emphasize, okay, let's say someone's allowed to do it and they don't get this deduction. Why do we care so much? Again, a reminder, the reason we care so much about you not being able to get the deduction but making this contribution is, what are you doing with that money? You are locking it up until age 59 and a half plus, unless you want to pay penalties on it, and not getting any tax benefit for doing so. Okay. And then let's say that money grows because it's invested, the gains on that investment, you contribute $7,000, it's worth 70K 30 plus years from now. The gains on that investment, if you take it out and it stayed in that traditional IRA, they're going to tax that at ordinary income rates. Whereas if you had just invested that elsewhere, like even just a brokerage account, if you hold an investment for longer than 1 year in a brokerage account, which is to say not retirement investing account, it gets taxed at long-term capital gains rates, 0%, 15%, 20% right now, which is way less than income tax. So it's like you're costing yourself, if you continue to do this for 20, 30 years, you just make that $7,000 traditional IRA contribution because someone told you to, you might be paying six figures worth of taxes more than you really needed to for no extra benefit down the road.
You know, it's different when we're thinking about other types of contributions to a retirement account, right? So, for example, a regular like pre-tax contribution to a 401k, you are getting the benefit because it's pre-tax. So you are getting tax benefits. You can save money on your future student loan payments because you're reducing your adjusted gross income. So that's a case where you are getting the benefit. Like, yeah, you'll end up paying taxes in retirement, but at least you got some benefit out of it. The point is, we want to save you money in a case where you're not going to benefit from making that contribution today from a tax perspective.
We're kind of just comparing it to, oh, you could do a brokerage account, right? But what if there's plenty of scenarios that I've seen where someone did have a 401k, they weren't maxing it out, they're doing like $12,000-$15,000 in their 401k for the year, and then doing $7,000 in their traditional IRA. And I'm like, oh, what if you had just done zero to the traditional and increased your 401k contributions by $7,000? Now you get that tax deduction. What if you could be doing backdoor Roths, but you're doing this instead? Now you're not just comparing the cost to you of doing it versus doing brokerage. It's like, there's lots of other things too. Brokerage is the easiest to call out of, like, I don't even know why this is even an option. But like, if you, many cases, depending on the client's circumstance, it's like, there's three or four different options that are better, not just one. Let's pick the best one. And that difference can be a ton in savings.
And the other thing I'll point out too is that, honestly, a lot of times my clients, when I see that this has happened, it's not something that they have necessarily done on their own. It's often something that their former financial advisor suggested doing, especially when it's those commingled accounts that cause us to cry. And so the question is, okay, why are they advising that? And honestly, I think a lot of times it's being advised because there are some financial advisors out there who don't want to bother with the extra steps of a backdoor Roth IRA. And they look at a vet's income and they say, oh, well, you make too much to contribute directly to a Roth IRA, so you should just contribute to the traditional. It's a little bit of lazy thinking there, unfortunately.
Well, that grinds my gears because, especially since we're now past tax season, I can't tell you how many backdoor Roths I've helped with now or done for clients in like the last month. I could do a backdoor Roth in my sleep now. I've done like 30 this month, not even exaggerating, maybe 30 in the last 2 months for clients. It's like, that makes me mad hearing that there are advisors out there who let this happen because of laziness. Maybe that's just the reason of why it's important to get that specific financial planning advice from someone who's run into this scenario, you know, 1,000 times. So then that way, the work to unwind it or the work to make sure you're being efficient isn't that bad. We make it easy because we don't have to figure out how to do it. We've already done it 1,000,000 times.
And we will wrap it up on that note. Thank you for listening. If you liked this episode, click the follow or subscribe button. Until next time, take care and continue your path to financial success. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered individualized financial advice.
If a specific investment is mentioned, it should not be considered a recommendation or endorsement to buy or sell the investment.
All investments involve risk.
Past performance does not guarantee future results.
You are encouraged to seek the advice of a financial professional before implementing any investment strategies discussed.
Yay, compliance.